Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
USDA released the latest WASD numbers, and they show growing worldwide stocks of corn, soybeans, and wheat. We'll discuss that and so much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Tom Frentz of the EFG Group in Chicago. Steve Erdman, our scheduled guest, has taken ill. Our best wishes for a speedy recovery go out to him. Our panelists today are Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing from Lexington, Illinois, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities from right here in Champaign, Illinois. Gentlemen, let's open today's discussion with this question. How much should we make of the increases in the global stocks of corn, soybeans, and wheat in today's WASD numbers? And we'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel.
Well, basically, the USD numbers in the soybean complex is still a concern. We're looking at historically high ending stocks estimates, and it just confirms that we've got ample world supplies out there. So at some point in time, these beans are going to come into the marketplace, and they're going to provide some resistance. But short term, we continue to watch the funds as they come in and buy the dips.
Bill Mayer?
I would agree with that on the soybeans, what Kurt said. I think the corn side of it, it probably more important was the fact that the U.S. Ending stocks did come down some, and we're starting to see those decline, exports increase. I think that's just the first of several increases in exports we may see.
And Clayton Pope?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty important in the long run. I think it's interesting to note that if you look at the coarse grain carryover, which is comprised of maybe 60, about two-thirds of it is corn, it increased by 4.1 million metric tons today, or Friday's report, and a lot of people are making a lot of noise about China, you know, possibly suspending exports and that kind of thing. Well, 4 million, 5 million, that's about the neighborhood of the amount they've exported before. So even if they suspended all those exports, here we've picked up that much of the world carryover in one report.
And here are the way the numbers for the ending stocks have finished on the global side, by the way. In the wheat at 142.62 million metric tons. That's up from 141.96. Corn ending stocks at 130.15, up from 128.16. And the bean ending stocks number at 54.42 today, up from the 53.83 number in the February report. Informa today, releasing some numbers on their estimates for acreage, and I'd like to get your feelings about this. In corn, Informa says 80.091. Let me repeat that. 80.091 million acres will be planted. 75.2 million for the soybeans and wheat at 58.28. I suppose a couple things to note. The soybean number from Informa is the same as was put in the ground last year. And that compares to USDA's stated number today of 72.1. The corn acres at 80.091 compare with 81.8 in the numbers that were released for this production season for USDA. And the wheat numbers at 58.28 compare with 57.2, which is what USDA had in the numbers as they were released this afternoon. So, Clayton, what are the numbers you're working with for acreage for the beans?
Let me just clarify something you said there, Todd. You said that soybeans were the same as 2004 or 2005, I mean?
I believe
that. I thought there was about a 3 million acre increase.
There is. Let's see. 04, 05 estimate for beginning, let's see, planted acreage at 75.2, unless USDA has the numbers wrong. You can take a look at that and see if I've got that written down in the wrong way, but those are the numbers that came directly from the WASD report, and maybe
okay. Well, let's see. Okay, well, we're talking 2006, but the crop year whose carryover we're holding in the bins right now,
yeah,
it was 72, so it's 3 million acres above the last planted crop.
The last planted crop.
Okay,
that's correct.
All right.
Yeah, that's from last year to this year the change. So they're expecting this year's acreage to be the same as last year's.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought those numbers were pretty close to what the market's trading, maybe just a smidge more of a reduction in corn acres than what the market's kind of come around to lately. I think the corn number of people. Well, what the baseline projection was something about 80.4, 80.5. So there were then 500,000 acres of that, and probably close enough for right now until, you know, we get into get a better picture of the weather at that point.
Any thoughts on this?
Also, too, when you look at their spring wheat number, ideas were that with higher wheat prices, you know, we could steal some acres from corn and beans yet. Even if you compare to their last month's acreage report, they did adjust their corn acres also, too, as producers went back to corn and may pick up a few more spring wheat acres.
Here's the way the numbers finished at the Chicago Board of Trade this week, and we'll go through the corn and the soybeans and the wheat. Beans finished like this. The March contract had a high of 592.5, a low at 570. Their settlement price at 578.25. They were off 15 cents from last week. November beans at 614.75 were down 12.75 from last Friday's close. In the corn pit, the March contract had a high of 228, a low of 218.75. Their settlement price at $2.26 a bushel, down 2.75 from last week. Dease corn at 263, off 2.5 cents. And the wheat finished the March contract with a high this week of 380, a low at 364.5. They were up one at 374.5 by the end of Friday afternoon. And July futures at 393.5 were down 2.5 cents from last week. The March oats, by the way, at 182. Finished a penny lower for the week. Soy complex down 15 cents, just a continuation of what tends to be a bearish look fundamentally. And is there anything else in the marketplace we need to check in on?
I guess no. I didn't see that we really accomplished a whole lot on the markets in general this week as far as the corn or soybeans, but a continuation of the bearish outlook on beans. We did break some short-term support levels, but if you look at it from a broader perspective, we're still in that, you know, that $5.50 to $6 range on the nearby beans, and have been there since about the end of September, and we will eventually break out of that. It looks like we should break out to the downside, but the market seems to be pretty resilient, just like it showed today when it opened lower and had buyers sitting there waiting.
Kurt, when you looked at the numbers as they released from USDA on price today, the only thing that really changed was on the soybean side. And this is kind of an interesting on their expected average cash farm prices. Last month, 520 to 580 was their range. This month, they raised the bottom end from 520 up to 540. So now they have a smaller range, 540 to 580. Just an indication that they think that the bean marketing has moved along fairly well on the farmer's side, and their expectations are that the fundamental supplies will keep things a lid on things, but that the funds themselves may keep the price a little higher than expected.
Yeah, I'm not quite for sure what they were looking at, but there's some optimism there that maybe we've built some type of base. Now, this is the average cash price, and as a whole in here, producers have been fairly aggressive on trying to sell here at the upper end. So we'll see what the next few reports brings. Now, if we start seeing the South America beans come online in here and see the funds sort of liquidate in here, the next month they could probably lower back another 20 cents.
Let's take a look at the ending stocks number from USDA. Soybeans at 565 million. The average guess, by the way, at 562. And the USDA is 565 within the range. Last month at 555. So they raised the ending stocks 10 million. Where did they find that 10 million, Clayton? Do you know?
Yeah, they lowered exports by 10 million, so just kind of a straight flow through from that. On a world basis, there was a little bit of an increase in the world carryover, and that almost all came from an increase in production in China, about 1.5 million metric tons or so, and they left the South American numbers the same, which is kind of typical for this time of year. You know, we'll start getting some real yields pretty quick.
The numbers for the ending stocks for corn at 2.351 billion. This is U.S. supplies. The average guess at 2338 and the 2351 from USDA was within the trading range, but it was down from the February estimate of 2.401 billion, down 50 billion bushels, and that all came in. The exports were increased.
Exactly right. The exports are increased. Right now, the exports are running about 22% above expectations, and or 22% above last year, excuse me. And USDA has about an 11% increase over last year in their projections. So pretty close. Probably could see an additional increase as we go forward in the next few months. I want to back up just a minute to something Kurt said there. I guess I disagree somewhat on the soybean side of it with the farmer. I'm not so sure that the farmer isn't holding quite a few beans out here. He's aggressively marketed corn, I think. But I think from the bean side, they're they've been kind of a tighter holder than they have on the corn, and that works for a while yet. But whenever you get the South American crop in there, I'm not sure that isn't the straw maybe that breaks the camel's back there.
Recent history would tell you that that's probably the case, that last year and the year before that farmers held on for higher prices and they hold beans longer than they will hold corn?
Yeah, I guess I think, I don't know if I can say that's historically true, but I think it's true this year.
Taking a look at some of the other numbers that came down from WASI, and these were some of the changes on the World Ag and Supply Demand Estimates. In the wheat, Australia's wheat crop up by 50 million metric tons to 24.5, by half a million metric ton to 24.5. The EU wheat at 123 up from 122.9. And the China corn, by the way, stayed the same. That might be an important number to think about, 134 million metric ton. That's the second largest corn crop on the planet, right behind the USDA, but are behind the United States. Still, we raised about twice as much corn as China does. The Brazilian corn crop down a half a million at 41. Or down 1.5 million metric tons. They're at 41 from 42.5. Brazil beans stayed the same at 58.5 million metric tons, and the Argentine beans were raised 0.5 million metric tons at 40.5. Anything in those numbers that concerns you on the global front, Clayton, at all?
Boy, not really. I think we'd probably all agree that we have adequate supplies here right now, certainly for the next year. Then the weather this summer, of course, will make a big difference. But there's obviously something else at play in these markets, I guess, besides just the ending stocks numbers. And I guess the obvious thing to point to would be, continued fund buying, whether it's commodity funds or index funds.
How do farmers play the market as they head into the planting season? There'll be a lot of them that are in the machine sheds this weekend and next week getting the planters ready. Marketing probably not the top of their mind. Does it need to be?
I believe so, because seasonality-wise, as we get into April in here, we have that tendency to roll over if there's no real weather scares. If you look at the corn market, you look at the December futures, if you go back a year ago, we're basically above where we were at this time. There was only about 3 or 4 days we were much higher than this. I think that these futures topped out of that 273 area. Last fall, everybody wished they would have sold early. Now, here we are with ample opportunities, and I think they need to take advantage of it.
Everybody agree with that?
Yeah, very critical time, I think, as we move into the end of March with the acreage report coming up, and you start to get your extended forecast that show the first part of April forecast. I think that's a very critical time from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, I'd agree, too. I think these are tremendous values for both old crop and new crop, and I think a farmer would be making a mistake not to take advantage of them.
A quick look at what happened in the Mercantile Exchange for the week. The live cattle April contract had a high of 86.25. They're low at 83.10. Live cattle settled at 83.45, off 257.5 from last week. The March feeders at 101.57.5 were down $4.75. April lean hogs at 62.35 on the high, the low at 58.50. They settled at 58.57.5. They were off $3.42.5 from last week, and the bellies settled at $1.97.5 lower at 87.45. So the live cattle down sharply, or the feeder cattle down sharply, $4.75 from last week. In fact, across the meats pits at the Mercantile Exchange, everything lower. Just bird flu, and can we take feeder cattle below $100 at some point?
Boy, looking at the apparent momentum on Friday, I would guess that wouldn't be too hard to imagine, really. And I think it's interesting, too, that what the cattle market's going through right now. I mean, it wasn't very long ago, 3 weeks ago or something like that. Everybody was kind of standing in awe of this cattle market. It just absolutely refused to go down. The funds wouldn't stop buying it, even on one weekend when Japan came out and said that they were not going to drop the ban on imports, and you'd think it would have been the death knell for cattle. The funds came in and bought more. It just reminds me so much of the corn market right now. And all of a sudden, you look at the cattle market, and it's been destroyed. And what's done it? Well, to a large extent, it's the funds all running for the exit door. And I don't think it's too hard to imagine a similar scenario eventually unfolding in the corn market.
I want to bring the livestock just a second back to the product side of the beans. And the numbers from USDA this week showed that there'll be 225, I think it was, million pounds of soybean oil extra at the end of the year. But the bean meal surprisingly, I think for some people, remain unchanged, and that would be because everybody was thinking that bird flu would have much more of an impact, I think, on the bean meal. Why didn't it show up?
Well, I think the USDA wants a little bit more confirmation. The area that did show up in bird flu was poultry exports. They knocked those quite a bit, over 2%, and I think the next month or two will tell the story if the USDA actually sees it here in the U.S. or not.
When we return, we'll talk with Tom Fritz of the EFG Group.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first full week of March was an eventful one as far as the weather was concerned. High pressure dominated Illinois weather early in the week, making for somewhat cooler than normal weather for the first half of the period. By Wednesday, temperatures started to climb as a developing storm in the plains began pulling warm air northward. Average temperatures this week ranged from 1 degree below to about 2 degrees above normal. Precipitation was well above normal this week across the entire state as Illinois came under the influence of a much more active weather pattern. Most of Illinois received at least an inch of rain during the week, and parts of central and southern Illinois received upwards of 3 inches of rain. In 1 week, most of Illinois has received at least 3 times the precipitation we received in February. In some cases, this was too much of a good thing as heavy rain caused flash flooding in southeastern Illinois. In general, however, the rain was most welcome as it will provide significant recharge to the soil moisture ahead of spring planting. The key at this point will be to maintain regular rainfall for the next month or so at least. After this weekend, the weather will turn colder for next week. A few weak disturbances moving through the Midwest could bring a little light snow to northern and central Illinois late Monday or Tuesday, and then again perhaps on Thursday. As you might expect, temperatures will be colder than normal most of next week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities here in Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Our guest is Tom Fritz of the EFG Group in Chicago, Illinois. He is a senior partner in that company. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We appreciate it much.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I heard you tell the folks here just before we went on the air that you are a technician primarily by trade, but that you also look at the fundamentals. Do you think that the technical side of the market can give you an indication of what the fundamentals would look like ahead of time?
I think it does. That was one thing I learned way back when, that the technicals will tend to give you a signal before the fundamentals will. I'll ask a question right now. Why isn't the bean market following through to the downside?
And do you have an idea?
Well, number one, the one that comes to mind is, it's my idea that bear markets are sustained through liquidation. Who are we going to liquidate in the futures market and the soybean market? There's nobody long.
What's the technicals telling you at this time for corn and bean prices that we should be watching for, you think?
I think with bean prices, from a technical standpoint, if you want the market to go lower, it's probably got to rally first. We've got to get some speculative longs in here. When we flush them out, that would take the market lower. But until that time, I don't see the market sustaining much on the downside. We may sit down here. It bothers me a little bit just the other day. Soybeans struggled to have a 3.5 cent range. Here you are. You're pressing an extreme, and that's the best we can do. So that it spooks me a little bit, but once again, the fundamentals on beans are saying, gee, why do we need to be long? But the funds will come in. They trade on price action.
Let me follow up on that a little bit, Tom. On the index funds, or what we refer to as the index funds, the little bit longer term inflation hedgers, do they look at the fundamentals at all? I mean, do they consider look at the supply and demand and say, this is a market we want to be into, or it's not?
Of the particular commodities, no, they don't. When you trade an index fund, you're following a package of commodities. So basically, you're following, the index itself. You're not just picking apart saying, okay, example, here's the Goldman Sachs index. I want to be long soybeans. If you choose to trade with an index, you're going to buy the whole package. So they're not looking at each individual commodity.
Tom, let me ask this. Your point's well taken about you think that a bear market is driven by liquidation. But obviously these markets are tied in with the cash market. And when you look at, you know, 500 or 600 million bushel carryover U.S., you've got about 100 million metric tons about ready to come out of the ground in South America. I mean, what do you say about the liquidation of cash markets?
I think they'll hit us in the basis. We had, granted, Hurricane Katrina had a lot to do with the extraordinary basis levels we saw this fall. But right now, I think a lot of the bearishness that is expected to come out of South America will hit the basis, not necessarily the futures price. So, I tell people up here, watch your spreads. Continue to be bear spread beans, bear spread corn.
Well, I have a question on this. Then, what good is the Board of Trade if the index funds are only long the board, and they prop up artificially, quote, the price of soybeans or corn or wheat, and the cash basis is where actually everything sets a real price for the marketplace?
Well, I think in this instance, eventually the index funds will liquidate. I first started tracking index funds back in the 70s when I first started paying attention down here. Back then, everybody watched the CRB. But in this instance, I think the futures prices are creating opportunities as far as trading goes. And, the Board of Trade, I'll admit, I have some problems with the Board of Trade. I don't think their delivery contracts properly put together. And I think that has a lot to do with it. So that's why, in my opinion, we see some of these extraordinary basis levels, such as we saw this fall. And right now, I think the spreads are telling us that this market is being kept alive almost on an artificial basis.
I've got a lot of questions after that, but I'm going to stay with the index funds for just a second. Liquidation, does it really come with the index funds, or do they just continue? Liquidation is liquidation in the current month and then roll on out? Because, for instance, it's I think with Deutsche Bank, they reevaluate just once a year how much of any one of those, I think, six commodities that they might have in their new index fund, so that it we know exactly how much we know on a percentage basis what they have. I think it was 11.5% corn, 11.5% soybean. Is that right? So does what do you mean by liquidation is the question in terms of the index funds?
Well, I'll give you an example. Back in the mid-late 90s, when commodities were relatively low, I called my stockbroker and I said, I want to get involved in commodities. And he kind of laughed at me and he said, you're a commodity broker. I said, I'm talking commodities in general. I don't want to buy every single commodity out there. He put me in touch with PIMCO, ran a commodity index fund. Oppenheimer had a commodity index fund. What will happen is the subscribers to these funds, when they see their rate of return is not what they thought it would be, they'll start pulling out of these index funds, and that in turn will prompt these people to sell their futures that they've amassed over the last year or so.
So liquidation in this case is driven by the clientele who wouldn't be making as much money as they were hopeful to make.
Exactly. If you look at any index fund right now that has been following the Goldman Sachs index, if you weren't in that fund prior to, let's say, the beginning of August last year, you really haven't made any money right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, a lot of these index funds are down something approaching 10% for the year, I believe I read the other day. But let me ask you this. It's obviously real easy to follow the commodity funds, the Commitment of Traders report, but everybody's been pointing out of late that with the new power of the index funds that and they're considered a commercial and so the positions are camouflaged in those reports. Do you think there is a way to somehow extract that data from the CFTC numbers or something else?
Oh, I think the CFTC, as we speak, is working on something that will be able to break out those index funds into a totally separate category.
Mm-hmm. It'd be.
There's too many people beating them over the head right now.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Got to do something about this.
Okay, if you could go through maybe what your strategies for cash corn and cash beans might be over the next for this coming season.
Short term, earlier in your show you mentioned that your producer he's going to start devoting his time to getting his machinery ready. field work and such, I think you could probably see in that time frame, you'll see your basis do a little bit of appreciation. But I'd say just a little bit. I think your pipelines are pretty flush right now. And then once the crop is in the ground and it starts growing, depending on how that goes, I think the producer will probably look at, you know, when do I sell more grain? It's my idea that come the end of the summer, now that's contingent on that we have a decent growing season, we're going to see extraordinarily wide basis levels again. Let's call it mid-late summer.
What's your assessment of the wheat out west? Do we have some more upside weather premium to put in it, or are we about to a point of equilibrium yet?
You know, I've been around a long time. When you get into a weather market, there's a lot of emotion involved there. And from what I hear, that these funds, they're pretty much maxed out on what they can buy in Kansas City. And if that area, those southern plains, stay in dire condition, they're going to come after Chicago because they're just going to say, hey, we can't buy any more Kansas City due to the liquidity of that market. We're going to have to come to Chicago for it. And to me, volatility is going to run sky high here. You saw what happened today or on Friday late in the market. A fund came in, sold 5,000 contracts in Chicago wheat, ran it down to almost unchanged, and here Kansas City sits up 6 to 8 cents.
Do you feel like wheat's a leader in the or in the grains up there, and is that going to pull along the corn and soybeans somewhat too?
I think it keeps the corn market alive, just in relation to you know, what we used to feed with wheat. Wheat feed's getting a little high price now unless you're going to find some junk out there. And beans, you know, I think beans are stuck in a world of their own right now. They don't know what to do with themselves.
Let me ask you a quick question. It might be kind of tough, but with your cash background, how much interchangeability is there for wheat users? In other words, can the hard red winter users plug in software, you know, soft red in a time of need?
In most food ingredients, I don't think so.
Yeah, I believe the answer to that question is actually no, that they really can't change hard, soft, durum into one from the other, that those are three different crops with three different uses. Any final word from you today, Tom? Thanks for your time, by the way.
I think we've got some excellent trading markets ahead of us as we move into the spring and summertime. And as a commodity trader, you know, we want markets to move. We don't care which way they move, and I think we're going to see a lot of movement over the next, you know, the next 6-7 months.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Tom Fritz is a senior partner at the EFG Group. Now a final word from our panelist, Kurt Kimmel, please.
Well, I think we got to remember there's two types of markets here, and we got to keep our head on straight and pick one of them. There's a hedging opportunities, and there's trading opportunities. You can't do both.
And Bill Mayer?
Just to reiterate, I think the next 2 to 4 weeks here is very critical from a marketing standpoint. Make sure you have your plans in place before you go out to the shed.
And Clayton Pope.
Yeah, I'll go along with what these guys are saying. I think that the froth of the market's real exciting and trading is fun, but boy, these values are very enticing if you ask me, and I wouldn't ignore them.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to our panelists, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope and Commodities in Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. You can listen to this program at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. On the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.